This is the Jamal Show.
Down in
Jamal C. Wright.
Jamal.
Jamal C. Wright.
Jamal.
This is the Jamal Show.
Oh, man, good morning, my friends. Kind of cold out there today, isn't it?
This is the Jamal Show.
But still good to be alive, is it not? I'd like to start with a reference to a show that I like to watch. When it comes to feeling good to be alive, the show is popular. It's broadcast on several different networks from time to time. It's called I Survived. And there are a lot of other knockoff shows with the same theme. The plot goes something like this. I went through a horrific ordeal, and I shouldn't be alive, but somehow I am. And these are all real stories. It's quite suspenseful. The shows are ostensibly about some random person who goes through a horrific set of circumstances that they should not have survived. The people tell their story with a camera close-up, and they go through all the terrifying details. Some of them were mauled by grizzly bears. Some were attacked by sharks. Some of them were shot multiple times. Some of them were abducted and thrown into a river. Far too many of them were females who were stalked and brutally attacked by an ex-lover. All of them were horrific tales. But to be honest, I love shows like that. I always watch them, and it's not because I like to see people suffer. Quite the contrary. What I like is to see what brings people to the other side of suffering. I like to understand how people survive the most tragic incidents of their lives. And I got to tell you, with shows like I Shouldn't Be Alive and I Survived, you see a pattern. You see a pattern in the types of people that survive tragedies. Sure, some people are just lucky. When the mass shooter came into the classroom, the lucky students were in the bathroom, right? But the people who mostly survive these tragic ordeals usually do so because they really want to live. They don't kinda want to live. They really want to live. They want to live enough to be stabbed 21 times and still make it to the hospital. They want to live enough to get attacked by a lion and still walk 6 miles to get medical care. They want to live enough to swim through a river filled with crocodiles to get safety. Again, what you see is people surviving events that they shouldn't survive.
Well, you know, John did that, you know. He survived. That's why he's here.
Yeah, that's right. Most of us are trying to survive this cold weather today.
Hate those crocodiles.
That's right. That's right. And oftentimes, that somehow is simply a will to live. And not a halfway will to live. We're talking about a full desire. Like, if I have to cut my leg to keep living, then pass me the scissors. Now, my experience has shown me that the will to live is very important, even if you're not being attacked by a grizzly bear. Even if you're not lost in the wilderness. Even if your ship is not sinking. I sincerely believe that the will to live should be kept intact during your entire walk through life. Because if you don't want to live badly enough, the world will give you nothing but reasons to die. Reasons to die are easy to find, but reasons to live you have to search for within yourself. Nobody can give that to you. But sometimes the will to live is not enough. It doesn't always work just to want to live, especially when there are those who desire to beat the life out of you. I've got to be honest. I had a very wise friend tell me not to watch the video of the Tyre Nichols beating. I should have listened to that friend because I myself have been abused by police in the past. I was sure to have an emotional reaction to this Tyre Nichols video. And when I did watch it, I had that emotional reaction intensely. I was calling for the death penalty for these 5 cops, now 6 cops. I saw the black cops as traitors. They were worse than the Klan to me. You know why? Those black cops who beat Tyre Nichols to death were worse than white cops who do it, as far as I'm concerned. They are worse than the Klan. They're worse than the Klan ever was, if you ask me. And I've not had experience with the Klan, so why do I say this? I say this because white cops have an excuse. A white cop can always say, hey, my culture teaches me that black people are dangerous. I don't know black people, so I don't know what to expect in that community. But a black man can't say that. These animal cops all know what it means to be a black man in America, and they still beat their younger brother Tyre Nichols to death. They couldn't find mercy in their poisoned hearts for a young guy going through the same experience they went through as a black man in this country. That's just unforgivable to me. And they did it in front of cameras. And they did it saying worse things than any white cop would say. These cops had no excuse to do what they did. But I watched them do what they did with impunity, the same way they would have done it to me if I were out there. And as I watched them, one word kept coming back to my head, and that is punishment. This wasn't just a beating, my friends. These officers were angry. They went beyond a beating. This evidence that these officers inflicted, this violence that they inflicted, was meant to break the soul of Tyre Nichols. This beating was meant to humiliate Tyre Nichols. So when these cops heard Tyre Nichols weeping for his mother, I bet you those cops smiled. I bet you they loved that. Those five cops wanted to break Tyree's will to get up the next morning and live a free and happy life. They wanted him sad and broken. That's why they acted the way they did, pulling the man out of his car and throwing him on the ground. That was punishment. The Oxford Dictionary defines punishment as the infliction of a penalty as retribution for an offense. So the question then becomes, my friends, what was the offense that Tyree committed to deserve this punishment?
To this day.
In other words, what were those bastard cops punishing Tyre Nichols for? Well, according to the lies that they sometimes call a police report, Tyre was driving recklessly. He was acting like he was high on drugs, and then Tyre even had reached for a cop's gun. Now, not only do those police reports sound untruthful, they were lies according to the videotape, which leaves us at a loss for the true reason why these bastard cops felt the need to inflict so much punishment on this young man, Tyre Nichols. But I do have a theory. I'm no psychiatrist, but my theory is that these cops beat Tyre Nichols to death as an expression of hatred for themselves. And it's not that all uncommon for black men to feel this way. As it turns out, you can learn to hate yourself from a world who hates your kind. And that's my take. But we do have a special guest in the studio with us today who I do not want to punish. His name is Attorney John Rose Jr. He has several claims to fame, including one of the first black attorneys to be licensed in Connecticut. He was also the first black attorney to become a partner at a major law firm in Connecticut, I believe. He will correct me if I'm wrong. He has a storied career as an attorney in Connecticut, and his daughter was one of Disney's first young black actresses. So how are you doing today, Attorney Rose?
I'm good. The weather sucks. my daughter is married. She's fine.
That's great.
You know, one of these cops came from Bloomfield, which is where my daughter graduated
And we are about to get into that. We are very happy to have you sitting here with us today, especially with the news is this pertinent. I really want to ask you your take on the Tyre Nichols case and this video that was released. But first, I have to officially open the show. We're going to get right to you. We will then get your thoughts on this right after the break, okay?
All right.
Welcome to Saturday, my friends, the very next day of your life. This is the Jamal Show, the place to get intelligent, live and on your favorite podcasting network. They used to call me Congressman George Santos, but my current name is Jamal. I am an information junkie from Harlem, and I'm passing the fruits of my illness on to you. Then you can pass it on to your loved ones, and at the end, everyone will be a little bit smarter. As for me, I'm your listener guide, mostly along for the ride, coming straight through the Hartford studios of WKND, and I'm doing that live, just as extra punishment for the haters. Time to say hello to my folks here in the station. Hello to the Archbishop. He has just signed up to run the Jamal Show on his radio station, CLM Urban Radio. That is it, right? So we are glad to finally be syndicated. Also, a very big hello to my co-host and good friend, Dr. Alfonso Mack.
Good morning.
Who sometimes wears heels, but that's okay with me. We are also blessed to have some new blood in the studio, not very new. Attorney John Rose Jr., who mistakenly thought I had a good reputation, so he showed up again.
I've been telling him.
Thank you for that, Mr. Rose. I look forward to your continued presence. Tell your daughter I said hi.
I will do that.
I understand she's already married, though.
What's your last name? What's your new name?
She doesn't have a new name.
There you go.
Her old name is fine.
Okay. That's right. Says her father. Says her father. So moving on, it's been like 2 weeks since you last heard my voice. The last time I was on the air, the theme was failure, and I think that show speaks for itself. The episode is up on the podcast universe, and it refuses to go back to the country it came from, so please do check it out. Today I'm talking about punishment of the type we just saw on the Tyre Nichols tape. Now, believe it or not, some people think that this show is punishment on the ears. And when I say some people, I'm talking specifically about the owner of this radio station. If you can't stand me, it's a comfort you to know that he can't stand me more. That's why my words don't reflect the opinion of the people that work here at WKND. Because they think the Jamal Show was just a form of punishment.
Form?
And they may be right. If you want to call in, you can punish yourself. 860 218 2173. I repeat, 860-218-2173. Okay, folks, please allow me to punish you with some great independent music. When we come back, I'm going to ask Attorney John Rose why he thinks the cops saw fit to inflict so much punishment on Tyree Nichols. Please stay with us. For music today, we begin with a guy named Trouble the Chief. The song is called Heathen.
Leave me alone, so what I smoke to stay in my zone. I handle my own, leave me alone. Yeah, I'ma stand tall, none of that sucker behavior at all. They want me to fall, but I know how to fight with my back against the wall. I'm just trying to live free, everyone deserves peace. Just don't try and cross me, cause I'm a heathen. I'ma stand tall, none of that sucker behavior at all. They want me to fall, but I know how to fight with my back against the wall. I'm just trying to live free, everyone deserves peace. Just don't try and cross me, cause I'm a heathen. Censoring who? Yeah, I'm talking to you. I'm sick as the flu. Or corona, whatever, you know what it do. You ain't gotta like it, you know I'm the truth. The sound and the message when I'm in the booth. My knowledge yourself, you know I'm in the loop. Them pilgrims just fuming, they need to regroup. I'm on your heels, no letting up, so you know it's real. You done woke up a beast, I be trying to chill. Burn gas, lay low, pay a couple bills, always some blood to spill. We in the field, where else I'ma be, I was born there. No beaches or picnics and lawn chairs. Every night was a fight, it was warfare, I seen it all there. Me and you are not the same, hard times came and I ain't complain. Walking tall, G's, yeah, it's just some rain. If I fall, get up, do my thing again. Give my all, never bet against me. It's a warning, boy, don't test me. I don't wanna hear nothing next week, cause you realizing that your threat's weak. I'ma stand tall, none of that sucker behavior at all. They want me to fall, but I know how to fight with my back against the wall. I'm just trying to live free, everyone deserves peace. Just don't try and cross me, cause I'm a heathen. I'ma stand tall, none of that sucker behavior at all. They want me to fall, but I know how to fight with my back against the wall. I'm just trying to live free, everyone deserves peace. Just don't try and cross me, cause I'm a heathen. Thinking, what if we knew that they blinking was black, so-called, cause you know how I feel about that. Them labels is trash, cause none of them facts. Start giving them facts, they censoring that. Don't know how to act when Trump start to rap. Them cowards start feeling attacked. They thinking I'm gonna relax? Nah, I'm on a whole different type time. Enlightening brothers with a different type mind. Raising these kids so they ain't gotta grind like we had to for shine. Remember, always gotta love yourself. When all fails, you got nothing else. It's a cold world, better keep some heat. To be your last day, you leave it on the shelf. Me and you are not the same. Hard times came and I ain't complain. Walking tall, G's, yeah, it's just some rain. If I fall, get up, do my thing again. Give my all, never bet against me. It's a warning, boy, don't test me. I don't wanna hear nothing next week, cause you realizing that your threat's weak. I'ma stand tall, none of that sucker behavior at all. They want me to fall, but I know how to fight with my back against the wall. I'm just trying to live free, everyone deserves peace. Just don't try and cross me, cause I'm a heathen. I'ma stand tall, none of that sucker behavior at all. They want me to fall, but I know how to fight with my back against the wall. I'm just trying to live free, everyone deserves peace. Just don't try and cross me, cause I'm a heathen, yeah. I'm a heathen, yeah. I'm a heathen, yeah. I'm a heathen, I'm a heathen, I'm a heathen.
You know, you really have to believe in what you're doing in life in order to better get through it. That's really the message of this show. That's what this show is all about. And we hope you believe in the message as much as we do, which is why we're hoping that you'll take this opportunity to support us through ko-fi.com. That's ko-fi.com/The Jamal Show. Please join us there. Consider buying us a coffee. We need the caffeine to keep this show running and to keep telling the truth, quite honestly. So why don't you join us, and we'll give you a nice shout-out on the next broadcast. Join us at ko-fi.com. That's ko-fi.com/The Jamal Show. We'd really appreciate any support you can give us. Thank you very much.
And I'm back again like Uncle Joe Biden with the best jazz report since the moon landing. That last song was Heathen by my new friend Trouble the Chief out of New York City. You can find his music anywhere you get your streams. Now, moving on, we have Attorney John Rose Jr., one of the first black attorneys in the state of Connecticut, co-hosting with the Jamal Show for the day. And I would just like to start with you, sir. Did you watch the Tyre Nichols video? And if so, what were your takeaways?
I did watch the video until I was too physically sick to continue to watch it. What's my takeaway? Herd mentality. I don't know what drives men, mostly men. I don't know what drives men to get into a crowd of other men of their type and think that they can beat on people. I mean, look at the Rodney King case, which should have been the be-all and end-all of that kind of activity by police officers, white police officers back then.
Well, you know, okay. So what's give me some solutions. I mean, obviously having a black female police chief didn't do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that remains to be seen, right? Because we can say that the way she handled it prevents it more from happening in the future. But you know what's interesting about this? I asked y'all for a purpose. I asked y'all for a reason. Y'all are both in a different generation than I am, right? And so my earliest remembrance of this is Rodney King, right? So, but y'all, it's quite possible that you two guys remember worse, right?
Hanging, okay?
You remember before cops actually investigated this
Strange stuff. Fruit, that's what I remember.
But those weren't, they might have been police officers in the South back in the day mm-hmm. when they were hanging people because the law people were as often used to apprehend the black man,
or boy,
in order to raise the opportunity to raise the child.
I'm fine, but I'm interested because I called Dr. Mack on the day that I saw the video, and I didn't hear the same outrage.
Yeah, well, because you know why?
Why?
I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired.
And you've seen worse, right?
What did I just say? I said hanging. Okay, I grew up in a place where, when I was a child, for punishment, we still had the whipping post. If you did wrong, they tied you to a post and they whipped you.
And that was people that loved you. those are your friends.
That was mom with that iron cord, right?
So the problem I have with this is I was around for the Rodney King beating. I do remember that. I was maybe in my late teens. When I see the Rodney King beating, I see this one. I can't say that we've advanced. Look at them. If you just look at them aesthetically, this was actually longer. And it was done by black people.
And it was done by cops with cameras on their chests, which would broadcast all that they were doing. It's talk about unbelievable stupidity.
Yeah, well, it was more the camera on the side, the security camera that damned them rather than, in my mind.
But they knew those were there, too.
Right.
These are cops. They know all the cameras. They know those cameras.
All right. So I tell you what we need to do. Let's have a march and pray on it. That'll solve the problem, won't it?
Well, I don't know. Seven felony charges might help, though. Seven felony charges might help.
All right,
Those cops will go to prison. Okay. But is the cop brood, is that going to learn the lesson?
Here we go.
Clearly, are not learning this lesson.
Wait a minute, Jamal. So the deal then is, all right, why I said what I said previously, training. We've got to change the training that these police officers get and selection of them. Now, in the state of Connecticut, we've done some really nice things that I think we're going to be leading the country in terms of responsibility of police officers, okay? And I think that we will be going further. But once again, Connecticut's in the lead thanks to our present governor and the establishment and things of that nature.
What does it say to you that all these cops are black? What does it say to you? Anything?
Training.
Any surprise?
Training.
See, I go beyond that. I don't think you can train hatred out of people's hearts or cruelty out of people's hearts. What do you think, Attorney Rose?
I don't know that they're cruel. I think what they do is they get caught up in this mob psychology, and it's just, I have to protect my brother, and I'm going to punish this person because, ooh, my brother and I are chasing him or jumping on him. He must have done something wrong. And the mind, the herd mind, goes right to the punish, hurt, whomever. It's madness. Training, as Maxie says, is really very vital.
Well, how about this, right? Well, I've always believed we got to turn the police department into a white-collar job from a blue-collar job. I think that one of the biggest problems in the police department is the fact that it's seen as a blue-collar job. It's a union job. Like, yeah, you know, that, you know what I'm talking about. Unions have always kept black people out. And so what if we paid cops like they were supposed to be paid and made it more of a thinking job? Because that's what it's supposed to be.
Well,
a thinking
man's
job.
Whoa, who said that's the way it's supposed to be? Now, come on now. From way back, at least in the Northeast, it was designed to catch runaway slaves. All right? The whole psychology was designed to catch runaway slaves. And so how do you prevent the need to catch runaway slaves? How? What you do is that you beat the snot out of them so they don't do it again, and you let everybody know that you did it. And this is what's going on right now, in my opinion.
So now you're revealing something about law enforcement that most people don't know. Is that, you know how they say, why do you put race in everything? Well, race is part of why the law enforcement is acting the way it does, right? Law enforcement was built upon keeping slaves in certain areas in America, right?
And let's look at it straight up. These may have been black cops, but the victim, again, was a black man.
See, I hear people saying
this. Is that self-hate?
The reason why I brought that up, the fact that they're black cops, is because, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, they're surprised that black cops would do this. I'm from Harlem, and I'm not surprised at all.
I know you're not.
I'm not surprised at all. You know what I'm saying? There was Ice Cube said something about this years ago. Black cops showing out for white cops. Do we have a caller? Okay, is this an unsolicited? Let's see what this caller has to say. Go ahead and put him on. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, this is him. How you doing?
What's your name? Give me your first name, what city you're from, and state your opinion, sir.
I'm Kyron Aldi. I'm in Missouri.
Oh, tell me what your opinion is. Go ahead.
Can you not hear me?
Yeah, I hear you now. I hear you now.
Okay, yeah, I was calling because I heard that the topic today was punishment. And I just wanted to say something really quickly. First of all, because I haven't heard the show, I just kind of jumped in. Cameras will never stop violence. They just give you a chance to relive it again. But the real thing is, when someone is punished, it will never, ever fit the crime, because the person who got injured or affected by it got affected by surprise, whereas the person getting punished knows why they're being punished, and the punishment will never fit. It will never fit, because the person who got hurt in the first place never asked for that. They hadn't done anything to deserve that. So punishment is very difficult to calibrate. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. And while I'm at it, I will tell you to enjoy your job.
Suggestion.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I just came up.
Do I sound like I'm breathing hard?
I apologize.
Where do we go from here?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that real quick, and I haven't listened to the show yet today. I just jumped out, so I'm going to let you guys go with that. But I just wanted to let you know, that people are always videotaping people getting injured and so forth. And I hear you. It documents it, but it really does nothing for the person who got hurt. It really does nothing to stop the activity, because now it's so common that nobody cares. Videotaping, I'll punch him in the face anyway. And that's kind of how it goes. I'll just lie about why later. So, all right. Thank you guys so much. I know that sounds crazy. So have a great rest of your show.
Thank you for calling in, Kyle Rinaldi. He said,
I have one disagreement with you.
What's up?
Well, it does benefit. Well, it instantly makes the victim's relatives millionaires.
And I will also say that, if anything, he's right about one thing. People aren't shying away from cameras anymore. They're like, oh, well, if you put a camera on me, I'll do it, and then I'll get fans for doing it.
George Floyd's case would never have gone where it went if that young woman hadn't been standing there with that camera.
That's true, too. I want to talk a little bit about the Scorpion Unit. Have you heard of these units? Years ago in Memphis, they had a bad crime surge. Politicians started adopting this get-tough-on-crime posture. Usually when they say get tough on crime, it means sending violent cops into black neighborhoods. And that's usually what happens in urban centers all around the country. First, there's a violent crime, a surge of some type, and it scares people. And when I say people, I mean mostly white people. And don't get mad at me for telling the truth. I didn't create the country. It was already broken when I got here. The white fear of skyrocketing crime gives police the clearance to go haywire and create these elite units that ride around cities like a gang of thugs. That's basically what the Scorpion Unit was. The whole idea is that it takes a little bit of oppression to bring peace back into the streets. The cops have to slam some heads because that's the language of the streets. So it goes. So you have these officers in major cities who trample over rights and kick down doors without warrants because they know that most of the time they'll get away with it. Their goal is to be as intimidating to the people as possible, which is a good reason why the Memphis Task Force named itself the Scorpion Unit. Now, if you're there to help people and aid people and save cats out of trees, why call yourself the Scorpion Unit? A scorpion is an arachnid that gives deadly poison. It says a lot that a service organization like the police department would want to name a task force after a scorpion. So here's a question for everyone in the studio today. If elite units are used to go break up gangs, find guns, and stop the most violent crimes, why do you think they're out there doing traffic stops?
Boredom.
If you're elite, why, the SWAT team doesn't do traffic stops, does it?
In my neighborhood.
I hear that. Well, not now. Your neighborhood now does traffic stops on other people besides you.
Look at the structure of police departments. And what's happening all over the country is that, not all over the country, in many places like Memphis, really fascinating people have been elevated to be police chiefs, to be the psychiatrist for the police force. But they're taking on an entity that has been imbued with this power over people forever. So by the time it leaks down from the chief's office to the guy on the street who's chasing black people, it doesn't meld yet. So we got to work on doing all of that. I just read a book called The Other Side of a Street in New Haven. I cut my teeth working in a black neighborhood in New Hallville where the police were incredible, the black police. They were just amazing thieves. They were bandits. They were bullies. And they put people in jail for doing nothing. They convicted a young boy in this book who didn't kill the guy who was killed in a black neighborhood. Okay. But he confessed because they promised him he'd only get probation. They held him captive for months, weeks, before he finally confessed. The police departments were sick, and fixing them is really a big mix that the towns, cities have to commit to, starting from the bottom up. We're starting from the bottom, from the top down.
Well, that's
slow.
That's what I like about what I've seen in the past couple of years in the state of Connecticut. I'll toot his horn. Our governor, and we've changed a lot of the laws of responsibility, and we had a lot of people leave the LEOs, that's law enforcement officer organizations, and everybody thought the world was going to come to an end, but it hasn't. But those who can't deal with the changes need to go, and they've gone on their own peacefully, a lot of them. We still have some left, but we are at least, what I see in Connecticut, so, you know, you either lead, follow, or get the hell out the way, all right? And Connecticut is leading, and we have a way to go, okay?
Well, being from New York, I've always said that Connecticut had great politicians. The Supreme Court, I'm not going to criticize the Supreme Court on live radio while I'm a practice attorney, but I'm not a big fan. But the politicians in Connecticut are leaders. Let me talk a little bit about training, because you brought that up. Would it surprise you to know that the five cops that beat Tyree Nichols to death were all on a Scorpion unit? And the training is in question because none of the arrested officers were part of the force for longer than 5 years. All of them were there on the force for less than 5 years. And in fact, one of them, their previous job was at a fast food restaurant. Mm. So you go from the fast food restaurant, you go from Wendy's to the SWAT team, and you're there for 2 years, and surprise, surprise, you beat a young black man to death.
And guess what? One of the biggest problems that you have in that context as a cop, gun or no gun, is fear.
And I'll tell you, my friends have been calling me all week telling me that these cops are in double jeopardy. They're screwed by the cops. You know the cops ain't going to stand behind them. The union is going to be like, oh, this is easy to drop. Oh, this is an easy one. You know what I'm saying? And they're getting dropped. I mean, Tyree Nichols' mother said herself many times, and I agree 100%. These cops brought shame to their own family in many ways, the black community in many ways.
Imagine their kids having to go to school.
That's what I'd be thinking about. But the thing I can't, the punishment aspect of is what I can't get over. They beat him like he cursed their mother out, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, oh my God, you're reckless driving, man. You know you could have killed somebody.
You know what you do is you take the license plate down and send a couple of officers the next morning and give them a freaking ticket.
Mm-hmm. We hate tickets. I'm a black man, and I can tell you for sure, I think I speak for all of us, we definitely hate tickets. Let's talk about the medics who stood around talking about the football game while this man was dying on the streets. Three of them have been fired. Two of them black. Again, more black people standing around smoking cigarettes, you know, talking about last night's game while a man had to be set up against the car. What's going on here?
You want black people to be better than white people. Right? Good luck with that.
You know what? Well said, my friend. Well said, my friend. I need to send a shout out to Memphis Police Chief C.J. Davis. He wins the Jamal Show Award for today. Let me just go ahead and get that out right quick. What great leadership she has shown. And let me just say this. This story isn't all bad. There are a few bright spots. Police Chief C.J. Davis, a black female, not that it matters, moved very quickly to terminate all the officers involved. This almost never happens. And it shows us the progress that can be made whenever you match the right people to the right job. Whenever cops have killed colored people in the past, you always hear the police chief say something like, let's let the investigation play out. Please don't jump to conclusions, blah, blah, blah. Not this chick. This police chief told those cops, hand in your gun, mofos. She terminated those officers within 20 days of the incident. And in fact, she just added a white officer to the termination list. Anybody like the way I use the term colored people? I'm trying to bring that word back. Anyway, you know who also deserves a Jamal Soar Award? Before I forget, Shelby County Prosecutor Steve Mulroy. He's a white man, not that it matters. But he is the guy who brought those charges against these officers faster than any prosecutor has before him in any public case. And he gave those cops some rough charges, too. Murder in a second. Kidnapping. Official oppression.
Let's hope he does so with the white officer who just got terminated.
Okay, let's talk about that. The white officer, Ben Crump, said something. Ben Crump's the guy that's handling this personal injury case, which is what it is. And he said something about how this is a benchmark now, right? All around the nation we hear, oh, we got to wait till the investigation finishes. Oh, we can't indict the cops. Hey, oh, he shot a black man. Let's see what the union says. Hey, police union, what do you think about this? You know, that kind of stuff. Benjamin Crump is saying that this can be the new benchmark. This police chief, CJ, she's if she can do it, then from here on in, other police chiefs can do it. Is this something you expect to happen more and more? The cops being indicted?
One can only hope.
Yeah, but come on now. We still have to give them, and I'm telling you, due process.
Yeah.
Okay? They still have to get due process.
Yeah, yeah, because they gave him due process. I mean,
just the same kind of due process they gave that young man who, at the very worst, was a lousy driver.
And just because what they did was wrong doesn't mean that the process given to them is wrong. We still have to follow a process.
We do have to follow a process, but I'm very disturbed at how everyone was just kind of walking around like this was normal. And you know, the police report came out like yesterday, right? Let me surprise you here. It doesn't match the video evidence.
Shocking.
You know, now my mother was a judge in Philadelphia. Not many people know this. And one of the things she always came home and said was that cops lie on the stand all the time. We have two attorneys here. Anyone disagree with that? The cops will understand. Not all the time, but, you know, enough.
No. from the lawyers.
So, let me just say this. If these guys are convicted, they'll be going away for a good long while. And I'd actually love to see them punished in the same way Tyree was. Now, I know that's not our system, and we're not going to do that. We don't live in a game that plays games like that. So, but I want to say that his brother, he does have a brother, and they asked his brother on CNN, what would you like to see done with these guys? And he said, I'd like to see the same justice that my brother got.
Oh, we just don't live in a country like that. Are you just going to stand here and do the eye for an eye, two for two?
No, no, I'm not for that.
Right, because you just have a lot of blind people.
I will say, but I will say, this was an emotional case for me, and I thought the death penalty, I mean, I'm just like, what excuse do these guys have? What excuse? If you made it to be a black officer where you're on a Scorpion team or whatever, then you had to go through some obstacles, and you find a kid with no record. This kid had no record. Look, let me tell you something. If this kid had just come back from shooting three infant children in the head, in the back of the head, a lot of people would have turned their heads to this. But this is a 21-year-old innocent kid with no record going where? Not to the club. Home.
I have a teenage grandson in Austin, Texas. I worry about that every day.
Yeah.
He just got his driver's license.
Yeah.
Good idea? Bad idea? How about get out of Texas idea?
Yeah, I got a young son, male, and I've had the talk, okay, on what to do. And yes, I believe it has saved his life.
Well, he's in a safe place, Florida.
Florida, yeah.
Florida, Texas. Oh,
boy. You know, he's safe, so we don't have to worry about that. They love black people in Florida, from what I hear. So, okay, my spider sense is tingling. That means it's time for a break. And after that, I need to talk to my good friend Jimmy a little bit, if he calls in. If he's going to do his biweekly book review, and I hear he's got a book for us to read. Hopefully, our friend and guest host, Attorney John Rose, will stay with us as well and join in the conversation. Will you do that, buddy?
I will.
Do that. And until then, please enjoy the indie music. We're going to take a break. This is My Man Hip Hop by Seeds of Labor. We'll be right back.
My man Hip Hop, he took me to the cops, cause I brought an illegal rhyme into the house of his pops. He be bugging like that, asking for his mic back, around when I roll a blunt, asking for me to like that. From here to Iraq, they know I'm in the streets well. Your wives do not believe all of the stories that he tell. The way he'll go on, if you let him, can surely turn this type of talk into a profession. However, in the end, he remains, no matter who fucks up his name, no matter who claims, he needs some water on his brain.
I just wanna kick a rap about a good friend. He grew up in the south end of the Bronx, doing call and response. I met him in Michigan. While other kids were dissing him, my mom bought me a Walkman, so I was always listening to early shit. While everybody else was saying it would never last, or go the way of Country or Humphrey, Bogart. Even others said it wasn't art, just noisin'. But to me, this nigga filled a void in my life.
My man Hip Hop. That's right, my man Hip Hop. My man Hip Hop. That's right, my man Hip Hop. My life is hip hop. I hung with him for years. He gets around on the usual, like musical chairs. Used to have me running home in confusion with cheer. The skills couldn't back me up. They refused to appear. Now they're here. And me and Hip Hop, we rock the same gear. Not a coincidence that he has police visiting. He likes to keep his spot sizzling in the face of cops. Saw him on the corner last night with a case of Scott. Speaking like a reverend, often telling lies to my brethren. At other times providing mental medicine.
It goes, hip-hop and me be carousing through the city on summer nights. Or even in the winter, I've been to places where people jump to greet him when he gets there and loosen up with an excuse to get close enough and sweaty. Plus, it's so dark in here that every human is adding to the atmosphere. It's humid. It's jungle life. Plus, blunts be burning until the early light. It's club life. Dope girls look doper in the strobe light, and everybody's waiting for my man to rip the mic.
Hello, hello. This is the Jamal Show. That was Seeds of Labor. It's called My Man Hip Hop. Right now, we're looking for a spot for you. But I want to go into a little bit why this thing keeps on happening around the nation. And I think a lot of it has to do with the culture at police stations. There's big culture wars going on in America right now. Don't you agree?
Absolutely.
There's a big culture war going on in America, and it's infiltrated our blue-collar workers.
Yep.
I just had a client go down to Florida and approached the police station, and they gave her nothing but the business. And, you know, we all know what's going on in Florida with Ron DeSantis, right? I mean, this is a man that's trying to turn back diversity moves at colleges. Now, I don't tell many people this very much, but I am a child of what's called affirmative action. I went to Syracuse University. I did not have a high school diploma at the time. I did not deserve to go there. Now I wouldn't be able to get in there. My son can't get in there. But I was able to make something of it. You know what I'm saying? So it wasn't like, you know how the thing about affirmative action, they used to say that people in affirmative action aren't qualified. You know, they're given an easy way out, you know, or whatever, anti-white, whatever.
I mean, you can't grandfather your son in?
No. They do. Let me tell you something. I'm working on a case now. The colleges don't operate the same way they used to when I was younger. Now it's all about money.
If you throw $500,000 at him, I guarantee you he'll get in.
But you have Ron DeSantis now eradicating African-American studies classes. I mean, I'm talking in front of one guy, maybe two guys, who had to be walked into school because of segregation, right?
Yeah.
And now we actually have governors that are against, you know, integration in a way, right? Y'all don't look surprised.
The more I see, the more I know. I expect this from DeSantis, all right? I mean, I don't expect anything other. What do you say, John?
He's an ass.
keep it simple, John.
But how much is this a reflection of Florida, of the fact that it's an elderly white population? You know, is that what it is? Because I don't think this is going to spread all throughout the nation.
It's not. I mean,
he thinks he can run for president on this.
And he probably can.
He can run.
You can run.
But Trump ran and won. Think about that
as
you think about your wonderful nation.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one term, right? I mean, we always make a mistake so we can go around and turn around and fix it, right? What do they say about America? Two steps forward, one step back all the time?
Wasn't ready for a woman.
Yeah.
Well, let me just tell you, we're near the end of the show, so I want to give my friend. We do this book review every 2 weeks, right?
And
we do
reads,
it with an old friend
John
of mine.
John reads a lot.
Yeah, he reads a lot. So, and he writes. I believe you have a book out, probably.
We should be.
All right, so my man Jimmy's gonna come on and tell me what book he's recommending for today. And you know what? He gets a little mad if I don't play his intro music.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's go ahead and get that. Whoop, wrong one. I sent a drink last night. Jermaine, are you there?
What's up, my friend?
Oh, there you go. Before I get into your book for this week, you actually gave me something really deep to think about last week. You told me, Jamal, don't watch that video. Why did you not watch the video, Jimmy? Why not?
The reason I don't watch those videos at all anymore is because they've trivialized our deaths. It's like watching dogs die, you know, it's like wrestling, you know. After a while, dehumanizing someone is exactly that. If you make their life, if you make their death worthless, you know, how come they don't show white people when white people die at the hands of police? Because they do. So there's a cottage industry of trivializing, fetishizing our death. I saw all these places where they were like, tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, it was at 7 o'clock, the video, dun, 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 you know? And so after a while, if you keep watching that stuff, it's like the first time you watched pro wrestling, you were like, oh my gosh, is that really happening? And then after a while, it becomes a joke. You start to, I actually heard people saying, oh, I couldn't really hear it. I couldn't, it was grainy. I couldn't really see, you know, people start to want more and more and they devalue your life. They devalue black lives with that stuff. And that's why, in my opinion, they show it. Because they don't even show dogs getting hurt. In Hollywood, they give Hollywood producers a hassle if they show animals getting hurt. But then you can watch a black man lose his life on any one of the network channels any day of the week. So I know what it looks like. I know what it feels like. I take it seriously. I don't have to watch it, though.
I think that's a very wise opinion, and I wish I had listened to it, because after I watched it, I was angry for 2 days.
Like I said.
Yeah.
I'm sick and tired.
Oh, I'm angry, too. I was angry for days, but I don't have to watch it to be angry.
Say that one more time, Jimmy. We missed you.
I said I was angry, too. I'm angry still, but I don't have to watch it to be angry. Now, I'm glad that it's being shown. Before, they didn't show these things, and that was a problem. It makes sense because certain white people in the suburbs, people who've never experienced this kind of thing, need to see it. But me, myself, I didn't feel like I needed to see it because I know it.
And you should,
I know it intuitively.
Go with what you think and you believe. But I think it's important that we broadcast to the world the kind of crap that goes on with black people being treated by police the way they've been treated, because in large measure, in many places, it makes change. If change has got to come the hard way, okay, sad, but true.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. I agree. You know, your host, Jamal and I had our own experience, gunpoint, police, the whole bit. So, yeah, we've been there ourselves.
He's talking about another Jamal. Of course, everyone knows I've never been on the other side of the law. I don't even lie. I don't even lie ever. But let's hear about Mac wants to hear about the book you got today, man. Hit us.
All right, you ready for the book?
Yes.
Okay. The book, because the theme of the show is punishment, the book is a book called Monster by a guy who was first called Monster Cody. He's a leader of the 8-Trade Gangster Crips in Los Angeles. And then he changed his name to Sanyika Shakur. And the book is all about punishment in the penal system and how it really, what I took from it is it really doesn't work in terms of rehabilitating someone to just lock them in a box. But it's about his life story. It's about how he became a well-known Crip. He was a guy who could have been a CEO. He had a lot of charisma, a lot of strength, a lot of personality. And he could have done anything except that his environment, being in South Central Los Angeles during the 80s, during the gang era, during the crack era, his environment led him into gangbanging. So the guy did stints in and out of prison. A lot of people have heard about him because he's a very famous guy. What I didn't know until I was refreshing myself for this show is that the brother died in 2021. He died in a tent in a homeless encampment in California. So the point of the story is this rehabilitation, he died at 57 years of age, having done maybe 30 years of his life behind bars. It never did rehabilitate him. It never did really change him. And even though he wrote books, went on worldwide lecture tours and everything like that, he ended up dying a homeless guy in a tent. So it's a sad
first
story,
of all, I read that book. I'm trying to remember if you're the one who recommended it to me. I read that book coming out of college, and it is a fantastic book. It really is. It's a great story. It has a picture of him, I think, holding a AK-47 on the front.
Right.
His top is off.
That's the one. That's the book.
Maybe you don't remember that. But, it's a fantastic book, and I remember reading it myself, and I doubly recommend it. Anybody have any comments on that? On punishment, the prison system? Dr. Mack, you work in the prison system, don't you?
Yeah, it's been rumored.
Do you find a lot of punishment in there? I think Connecticut prisons are actually pretty good compared to New York ones.
I know they're pretty good. We've come a long way, and we've got a way to go, of course. But I've never seen a more dedicated group of people trying their best to do the right thing. And one of these days...
we should have the corrections office, officer director come here. We can probably have the commissioner come in one day.
Sure.
If he's not afraid of covering his butt.
He's a good man.
Let me ask...
I am very proud of where I'm working. If you haven't seen that in my voice and what I've tried to say... These are people who are trying to work it out, okay? Trying to make it work for everybody in the state, and I think it's from governor on down. I mean, I'm not just blowing smoke. I've seen it. And for instance, what new Leo's law enforcement officers are about to get a 35% pay increase? Why? Because we want more of them, new people in the system because we need them. Now, when we bring in these new people, we can train them with new ideas on how we want them to go so that we are changing the culture as we go, which is what we kind of knew what was going to happen. First thing we did, passed the law. All the so-called baddies went out. We can't tolerate it. No, I can't do it. Okay. But that left us with a shortage. All right. So now we're going, all right, and we realize what the shortage is now. And we're not complete, but we're working on it. But we know we need to... make it more attractive
to come into to be a Leo in the state of Connecticut, and they did.
I think a lot of people underestimate the effect of these new marijuana laws that legalize marijuana. But because that was one of the places where cops always come into contact with young black, young black men or what have you. You have a point?
I grew up in the system probably at least a decade or more before Maxi came along. And I saw the state build some really remarkably awful places like Northern, which is now closed, for purposes of putting people in cages.
Oh, okay, here. In here, okay.
And it's interesting, they put all the prisons in the countryside, except for Cheshire. But Northern was built, literally, to house animals, and that's why it was created. Thank God that politicians and penal people have advanced to the point where they can close a place like that.
So, Jimmy, are you still there? Let me see if Jimmy's still here.
Yeah.
Jimmy, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I want to ask you a quick question, and I want you to speak in complete sentences so we can go back and forth a little bit. What is your take on these scorpion units, these units, the jump out boys, you know? The guy, I remember a while back you were running down a street in Manhattan coming to meet me at a job that we shared, and you got thrown against the wall by cops who thought you were running from a crime. Well, what do you think about these tactics, these hard, heavy tactics they use in the black community?
Okay, here's what I think. And I've grown older, so I got a little bit of an older guy opinion now. These units are excessive in their policing, and that needs to change. That needs to be reformed. However, in my city, in Washington, D.C., ever since the George Floyd thing happened, they disbanded a lot of these things. They disbanded a lot of these units, and youth crime is running rampant. Youth crime is running rampant. The guy that was shot up the street the other day when I was talking with you, that guy died 2 days ago. There's been 3 murders within a mile of my house since this year. And what happens is when youth are caught with guns now, they're basically let off. And there's like the same 50 to 60 to 100 kids are being in and out and in and out and in and out of the system. And those are the kids. It's less than 100 kids are doing pretty much all the shooting in Washington, D.C. And so the problem is when they close these units, when they shut down these aggressive policing units, it's the people in the most vulnerable areas that pay the price. Like a lot of rich white people and rich black people, the people who have money and like to say things like defund the police, and then they can go back to eating their foie gras salad, okay, and looking out the window at a robin and a blue jay. Those people don't have to deal with what happens when the youth are given a slap on the wrist and put back out on the street. So there's a thin line between, hey, we cut off the scorpion unit. We closed the scorpion unit. Great. Now the people in Memphis, I don't know if Memphis has a gang problem. The people in Memphis who live in the most vulnerable neighborhoods are going to feel the fact that the scorpion unit has been closed. So you've got to figure out a way. In New York City, the gun squad, the people in the inner city, South Bronx and Harlem, and those are the people that feel the gun squad's been closed. So there's a thin line between cutting those things and all hell breaking loose. So they've got to figure out a way to treat people like people, but you still need these aggressive police units in some way. I don't know how exactly to explain how they do that, but the 50-year-old me is different than the 20-year-old me, you know?
Jim, bring back psychiatric help for young people. I'm talking about from age, I don't care where, people who know, but bring back psychiatric help. If you're rich in the state of Connecticut, you have the insurance and you can go to a hospital. If you're poor in the state of Connecticut, you end up in jail, but you will get psychiatric help.
Yeah.
Let me let you get your information out there. If someone's in dire need for philosophical thought or instruction in physical fitness, how can they reach you, my man?
I can be reached at James Muwonge, which is James and MUWONGE.fitness@gmail.com,
Or you can go onto my family website. My wife and I run a family health business. It's called The Family Dances, D-A-N-C-E-S, thefamilydances.com. Any internet device, phone, computer, laptop, tablet, any such thing will send you directly to us. And, yeah, we deal with family fitness. We work on Zoom. We work locally, and we're great. So hit us up.
That was my man, Jimmy. Jimmy, I'm going to be speaking to you soon, and I expect you to have a nice book for us in 2 weeks.
All right. Appreciate it, my friend.
Before I go, I want to give my friend, Attorney John Rose, do you have any messages for the audience? Anything that you might want to say? I try to give everyone this opportunity.
Towards the topic?
Anything.
No, don't do that to him. Give him a topic. He's a good man.
What do you have to say to America about aspects like this, situations like this that happen all too frequently?
Read about it, learn about it, talk about it with your friends, with your people. Get up and talk to your police chief. Get to meet your police chiefs. Get to meet the people who are running your cities, because they are the people who are going to answer to this. We had a case in New Haven, young man who went to prison for 60 years for a crime he didn't commit. A police officer made the case when they were looking for a murderer who was right next door, very findable. They put this guy in prison for 60 years. He got out after 19. I was the city's lawyer, cost the city $9.5 million. As a taxpayer, everybody ought to be pissed off about that. Learn about your police force. Talk to the people who are running it, the people who are running your city, because they can cost you a lot of money.
Yeah, that reminds me. I got a call from the police department last week.
Oh, that was for that bottle you had in the front
seat. Yeah. And the broken window, and the various petty crimes. But I will say, they called for a donation, and I actually said yes this time. I said yes this time because I thought to myself that I want a seat at the table. I want to be able to go to them and have them listen to me. You know what I'm saying? And I don't necessarily have a problem with falling with the families of fallen police officers and stuff and helping them out. That's what it was for. It was a donation to the families of fallen police officers. And I was like, well, I don't have a problem with them. You know what I'm saying? They got shot. They weren't shooting, obviously. So, you know, sometimes you got to participate in order to have a seat at the table is the point I'm trying to make. That's why that's what this show is all about. So we got to go now. But before I go, I want to thank Attorney John Rose for his presence today. I hope he come back one day when we have a really tough topic to discuss. Thank you so much for joining us today. Maybe we can do it again soon. Allow me to also say thank you to all the people who support this show. DJ Alex Sanchez, Dr. Al Mack, Joe Duncan, the Archbishop, David King, Dr. Delise Wunderler, my son J.D. Wright, and also everybody else. You guys are all good people, according to me. But most of all, we love our listeners, all 12 of them, perhaps 13 now. My friends, without the listener, we would have nobody to talk to, and that would be sad indeed. So please take care of yourself, and please try to take care of someone else, too. See you in 2 weeks.
This is the Jamal Show.
Jamal.
This is the Jamal Show.